Today on First Lady and Friends, I had a really important conversation with Maykel Reese. She's an emotional and relational intelligence consultant and a Utah influencer. We talked all things emotional intelligence and relationships, how we come together, so much about kids and how this works with kids, and a disagree better, how we can use emotional intelligence skills to disagree better. Can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. I have a great guest today. Her name is Maykel Reese. She is an emotional and relational intelligence consultant and a Utah influencer. So welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much. And then I'm going to do what I get to do with everybody. And my name is Maykel, like the month.
Maykel. Thank you for the correction. I'm glad you did that right off the bat so that I don't mess it up going forward. Thank you.
You got you.
We are really excited to have you on here. I've learned a lot about emotional intelligence in the last couple of years, and so I'm thrilled to talk about it with you. But let's, before we dive in, let's talk about you. Let's talk about your background. Where did you grow up? Talk about a little bit about your family, how you got here, where you are.
Okay.
All that stuff.
I grew up in Provo. I was born in Samoa and then moved here when I was one and grew up in Provo, a BYU Cougar fan.
Yeah.
And for those of your listeners who can't see me, which is all of you because this is a podcast, I'm biracial. And so I grew up in the 90s in Provo, biracial, and my white family raised me. And so that really informed a lot of my lived experience and why I do what I do now. And then let's see, how did I get here? That's a great question. Let's see if I can sum that up. That's a big piece of it. And then I learned too that like I just really love people. And I wanted to understand who they are, why they are, and the lived experiences that caused them to be who they are. Mm. And I had a bunch of different jobs before this. And in every single one, I wound up being the person that was like the HR, right? Or it was like I could speak to people where they could hear me. Mm. And I kept sort of avoiding this full on like, hey, I'm going to teach you guys how to talk to each other and be kind. Because I was like, that's not my call, right? Until it was like three careers deep that I was like, got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what I am meant to do. And so in 2020, I started talking about anti-racism with the fundamentals of emotional and relational intelligence. And that's when it really took off. And so then I left where I was and started working for myself full time and have not looked back. Mm. So
amazing. So talk a little bit about your family experience. That's so interesting. So obviously it's informing a lot of what you do and how you feel and how you connect with people. So maybe talk a little bit about that experience growing up in Provo and what kind of experiences you had.
Absolutely. They were many and most of them now, especially looking back, I can see where people don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it right. But also, it's very important to understand that when people don't understand. So I grew up in a family that was very political, very social justice oriented, woke, if you will, if we're still using that. And I don't think we are, but you understand.
Yeah.
And so I grew up knowing about social justice and it was a fundamental value in our home.
In Provo.
In Provo, right? Yeah. Which was unusual.
Yeah.
Actually. And they were Democrats, which is even more unusual.
Yeah.
Right. And so I grew up understanding politics at a very young age. But then my lived experience was I knew I was different. And so did other people because I was. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, nor did they make me feel like there was something wrong with that immediately. But it was the constant pointing out of it. Mm. Right. And that starts to make you so aware as a person of color surrounded by only people in white bodies to where you are just trying to fit in, even though now it's hilarious to me because I'm also a tall woman. And so it was like Clifford the Big Red Dog. I couldn't hide anywhere, but I was trying. Right. And so in those experiences, I was trying to be as and I speak very bluntly, so I'll try to always explain what I mean. I was trying to be white. Right. I had huge curly hair. I was trying to make it straight. No one was saying you're not enough because it's not. But the messaging is there. It's very it's like osmosis almost, right? Mm. And so as I learned that, I developed the skill to be able to read people because I was trying so hard to fit in, right? Even though most of my experiences were welcoming, right? My neighborhood, I lived in a neighborhood just above BYU campus, and they're wonderful people, right? Mm-hmm. But they would also say things. And so it was like, great, I've got to adjust myself. But when you know you are different than, you are going to pay hyper attention to the people around you so that you're not rocking the boats, any boats. Nobody's boats are being rocked, yeah. Okay? Because all of us have the deep need to belong.
Yes, yes.
Right? And we're all working for that. And as a child, that was my main goal. So I developed a skill to be able to read what people were feeling, thinking, and that there was something maybe off, right? Like I knew immediately when someone was sad, I knew those things. But that's where the skill came from. And it served me in such beautiful ways. But it was very confusing to come to the, like, all of the, because obviously there's baggage too. Mm. And there were things that did happen and things that weren't great about it. Mm. But mostly it's been the gift of my life to be so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's so interesting. And I'm trying to think about, you know, I guess my question is where, at what point in that journey of, you know, trying to fit in and we know from Brené Brown, you know, yes. the fitting in and belonging yes. are two very different things.
Very.
So in that sort of fitting in phase, you know, what, when did that change? When did you, at what point did you say, I don't need to change myself. Mm-hmm. I need belonging, but I don't need to try to fit in or change myself to be a part of a group. So maybe, you know, were there experiences along the way where, was it a gradual thing? Was it an experience that you had that maybe changed your mindset?
Absolutely. It's gradual. And as a child and I referenced the 90s because it was different, right? Yeah. We were not talking about what we talk about today.
Yeah.
And there was a very clear one beauty standard. And now it's not necessarily better, but it's getting more expansive.
Yeah.
Right? And which is a beautiful thing. So there in my adolescence and childhood, I was trying to look white. Mm-hmm. I was trying to appear as much as I could. And so everything was tailored towards that. And what I didn't know is that I was suppressing and truly trying to kill the brown parts of me because I perceived them as bad, yeah. right? And then it flipped in my 20s to where it's like, oh, none of this was bad, you know, and there's certainly anger. And to be honest, I think it's more of a, for me anyway, it was just adult development, right? I went into college. I saw that there was more and then really tried to own my brown side while then trying to kill my white side, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it's like, nothing is good about this. And humans go to extremes. We do this. Yeah. And I just did it within myself. And then I should say, like, when I grew up, I was an only child. Mm-hmm. And my mom had an extended siblings. And so I never felt like I belonged, partly because of what I looked like and partly because I didn't have any siblings, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And it's just... I don't know if that's the common only child thing, but as I flipped between those extremes and then being in college and trying to just only be brown, then it's funny. And then I got married and it kind of flipped back to, I'm going to go back into being what is acceptable as a mother, as a wife, as a LDS person, right? And in my brain, that was whiteness. Whatever that means, and what it meant to me was being very quiet. I had to look a certain way. I had to do these things. Once again, no one is saying this to me, right? But it is, and I found that it is a lot of people's experience. Well, then you have your children, and I got to be in my mid-30s, and I had an awakening. I suffered from intense postpartum depression with all my children, but specifically my third, and it broke me wide open to where... Because of my lived experience and because of what I was now focusing on career-wise and what was interesting to me in books and in the political landscape, that's what caused me to go, oh, I have two sides. Mm. It's time for me to accept that two different things can sit at the same time in the same person, and that I've always been too brown to be white and too white to be brown. right? So in both cases, you don't belong anywhere. And that understanding that is the gift of my life, because that is when I learned to belong to myself.
Wow.
And so I belong everywhere I go. It doesn't mean that you don't still need people or connection. It just means that now my connections are authentic because I'm already at home with myself. Mm. Right. And so then you find the people that are for you. You find those connections and you can find belonging, but you're not. I was desperately seeking it. And I do think that most people are. We want to belong. We want to feel understood. We want to know that we're going to be taken care of just socially, right? And not an outcast. And so that is how I got there.
Wow.
And owning the both.
So you talked a little bit about your kind of career journey. Take us through that. I mean, I know you're where you are now and doing something very different. What was the career path that you took?
Well, I was a florist first, so
that's fun.
It was fun, you know. But then I realized that my gift was not. I mean, it was fine. I was good at arranging flowers. Yeah. I was better at calming down the bride and mother of the bride.
Yeah,
you know.
Interesting. Okay.
And working through really hard conversations on price and what they had to get rid of and the family dynamics that happen.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine.
Oh, it's
because we've done two weddings now with two of our kids, and like they were great. I mean, the other parents were just delightful and wonderful. Yeah. So, but I can see the dynamic.
Like things come up, right? And so I knew I was good at it then. And then I went into, I worked at Sundance for a long time. And in that, and I was way better at diffusing situations than anything else, right? And I was the assistant buyer there and all those things. I was always better at interpersonal. And when things got hard, anytime there was a hard conversation that was needed, that is where I shined. Mm. And then I went from that to having children. And then I was a photographer because I loved it. And it was a great career to have children with. Once again, I was okay at it. I was way better at settling people into letting me take their portrait. Way better at, once again, family dynamics, whether it be in family photos, large or small, or it's at a wedding where... You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I learned that very quickly. And then my last career was in football.
What?
Yeah. I've been around.
I love football.
Same.
Love it.
Same. And I come from it. I exist because my dad was recruited out here. Like a lot of people out here are.
Yeah.
That are my age, right? Yeah. I'm 41. And it was this beautiful opportunity to go back into it and see where I came from. Sincerely, and that I loved it, but that it was once again the interpersonal relationships that I was good at and solving people problems and helping people understand each other. And that was finally, I was like, got it. I will just do this then. You
know? Yeah. Message received.
Yes. Yeah. And I think I avoided it for a long time. Who knows actually why, but I think I've been afraid of it because it has become a deep purpose of mine. Mm. And maybe I'm not alone in this, but when you find your purpose, it can be a little daunting, you know? And if I'm going to go full tilt into this, what does that look like? What does that mean? And it has meant giving a lot of myself, which has been rewarding. And also I'm a mother of three and the balance there is, and it was easier to turn off the phone with, you know, football and you know, high end retail and those kind of things. And now not so much. But it's everything. It's the passion. It's
I love it when you find, you know, I guess again, message received, and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, I probably should have done this all along, but having those experiences probably got you wouldn't been able to come to that conclusion unless you'd had all those experiences, which I think is really powerful. I want to talk about emotional intelligence. I love that word and relational intelligence. They are skill sets, and they're skills that can be learned, I believe, and I
absolutely
assume you believe
can.
That too.
Absolutely.
So let's take a break, and then when we come back, let's talk about those skills.
Wonderful.
We're back here on First Lady and Friends with Maykel Reese. She is an emotional and relational intelligence consultant and a Utah influencer. And we've been talking all things football off mic, but you know, that's for another pod. And it's going to be really great because we both adore football.
Stay tuned.
Yes, yeah. Indeedy. It might be a whole like separate podcast spinoff where Maykel and I go all in on Utah sports. Yes. So yeah, it might happen. But let's, I love this emotional intelligence. Like I said, like emotional intelligence skills is something I've talked a lot about as it relates to education and our teachers and how we need our students and our kids to understand emotional intelligence. And what I think is people don't maybe haven't caught on, or I hope we're starting to understand this, but, employers, companies all over that I talk to, all over the country, all over the state, say, you know, I can teach a kid how to code all day long, but I need a kid that understands emotional intelligence. I need an emotionally intelligent employee. Mm-hmm. And these skills are so critical. And yet, we're probably worse at them or don't have those skills, and our kids are not sort of getting those skills. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was maybe going a little that way prior to the pandemic. And during the pandemic, I think those skills and with social media and screens, we maybe just haven't had the reps on face-to-face connections, on social interactions and that kind of thing. And so I feel like it's more critical than ever that we start to be intentional about these skills. And they are skills.
Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about, first of all, what are these skills? And how are you helping to implement them? And what are you seeing out there just as far as like the need and how it's being met?
And I think you are absolutely right. This is absolutely a matter of reps. And let's see. The first question is, what is it? It is being aware of what you are feeling and why you are feeling it. This is something that is so new, but because of the internet, right, and all of that, we feel like it's been around longer than it actually has. We've really only been freely speaking about mental health, about emotions in general, freely, maybe 5 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. So the pandemic opened it way up, but we're still in a divide. Right. Yep. And we're still trying to figure that out. And that is partially, it's neither good nor bad. It's just going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what is the skill to be emotionally intelligent? You need to know why you're feeling what you're feeling. And it can be as simple as understanding how to name. So it's notice, name, and touch the emotions that you are feeling in this moment. Okay, and you don't even really need to go into the why, but most people are unfamiliar. And even like with, because I work with a lot of clients one-on-one too. I'm like, well, what are you feeling in this moment? And they're like, Because we're actually very unfamiliar with the depth and breadth of the human emotional experience. There's five main ones, but then it branches out into something completely different. So there's that basis of emotional intelligence, but then you have to bring in the, how were you raised? What are your biases? Do you know what they are? Right? Mm-hmm. All of the conditioning that you received as a child. And I want to be very clear here. I am not saying that anybody's conditioning is necessarily right or wrong. You just need to be aware of it.
Yep.
Right? And then once you become an adult, which I would argue is not till we're about 30. Right?
Yeah.
And it's not about not taking accountability. It's about your frontal lobe finishing.
Yeah.
Which is about 25, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's that full like step into, I'm too old to do whatever, yeah. Or just there's a resonance that happens within the self of like, I guess I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And there's a natural development where you're going, do I want this life that I have now built? Mm-hmm. And that comes from knowing, okay, I have this set of values, integrity. Did I choose it? Mm. Or did I choose it because I got belonging from it? Mm. It can be a both and this I think is the hardest part of understanding all the pieces of emotional and relational intelligence. We want things to be black and white. Nothing is black and white.
Binary choices. We love binary choices.
It is. And then something that I tell, I probably say this every day, whether it's at companies, whether it's with my one-on-one clients, it's like, hey, there's actually a reason that we do this. We want things to be black and white. Your brain is helping to manage the energy in your body. Okay. Critical thinking and holding two opposing things at the same time takes a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. So it's hoping that it can get you to go one way or the other, just so it's like her kidneys need to do whatever kidneys do. You know what I mean? And so we look at it as this moral, either right or wrong, right? When really your brain is just trying to do what it needs to do. And so understanding that concept, it kind of lifts some of that where it's like, oh, no wonder that happens so fast, right? And then you have to know when you're triggered. And then more importantly, why are you triggered? And then we take it to the next step of, the trigger is actually the gift. The trigger is letting you know where your wounding is, where you need to pause and go, I need to address this in myself. A lot of people hear that as I'm the problem. It's not true at all. It's saying you actually deserve to go in and be like, oh, that hurt. Or that made me feel afraid. I deserve to feel safe. Why would that happen? Right. And so, like I said, once you're an adult, that is on you. You have to be in charge of your emotional life, right? And then you're acknowledging that all the time leading up to that, that part wasn't really your fault. This is not to place blame. It is just to give you context. This is why, right? I tend to be tangential. So what, did I answer the question?
Yes. Okay. No, I love it. And you know, I'm relating so much to it because the more I read, you know, and one of my favorite books, and I recommend this to everybody is, Mark Brackett's book on emotional intelligence. Yes. And you talked about the you know, naming those emotions, mm-hmm. and he has a whole chart and it's really important. And I, you know, as you're talking about this, it's reminded me, you know, first of all, my interactions with my kids, because when you come to it, to a relationship with your kids, oh my goodness, it's the most triggering thing ever. Because
literally their job, I think, to just hold these mirrors up to like, why? Like, it's such a personal.
Why are you like that? Yeah. Oh shoot. Yeah. It's me.
Yeah.
But like, I know, and they there's so many things that you look at in your kids and you're like, oh, don't you? I find that the kids that are my kids that are most like me, mm-hmm. are the ones that I really try to beat it out of them.
Yeah, because you're like, please, I've suffered like, so much from this. Let me fix this for you.
Yes, yeah, right? And then you're just like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. And then it's this triggering thing. And I, you know, I have three boys. And so the boys, you know, there's just, there is a difference. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that out because my fourth is the baby girl. And she, I mean, you know.
My third's the baby girl. It is different.
It is so different. Yep. And she's 17 now. So it is this like tiptoeing battle of like, okay. And then I have to stop and say, like, she says something and then it triggers me. And then it's this, we go at it. So like, talk about maybe just some real strategies on like, how do we know when we're being triggered? Yes. How do we know, when that thing that your child says or your coworker says or that your mother-in-law says or something, like, how do we know? And then what is the strategy to like getting in the place where we're, you know, not doing the binary reaction, but we are actually, you know, in charge of our emotional moment and can make a good decision?
So I think maybe one of the first things to understand is that is what you actually have control over, which is very, very little.
Yeah.
And when I learned this concept, it was terrifying to me.
And for those of us that are total control freaks. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah.
And where we saw that, like, we perceived that our actions was actually some kind of control when really it's not. Mm. But once you understand that the only thing you have control of is yourself. Yeah. And if you want to boil it down, it's kind of just your thoughts, right? And your inner world. To me, it's now freedom because it is now manageable. Mm. I can manage my own, right? And let other people in that interrelational inform me. But if I'm trying to control everything, I'm exhausted. I'm depleted. Mm-hmm. I'm right. So mm-hmm. you're working outside of your control, which is just practically speaking a poor use of your energy because it's not actually possible.
Yeah.
And that control goes from control when you're actually forcing.
Yeah.
Okay. And so everything that we are looking at in the world right now, all of the problems, they are all caused by force.
Mm.
Every single one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Instead of choice and accountability. And or choice and consequence, right? And consequences are good and bad. But instead, we went to punishment. And punishment does not work. Yeah. And I'll bet that half your listeners went, yes, it does. It actually, the way that children learn the best is when they fall on their face. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, she was right. I shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, hey, maybe don't walk on that tight yeah. ledge because you might fall. Hey, maybe don't. Then they fall and they're like, oh my gosh, she was right.
Yeah. They'll never admit that, but.
Of course not. But it's, and then that isn't to say that we don't influence. So yeah. the first thing is understanding what's within your control. That's just you. Mm-hmm. And that everything else is influence. And of course we're meant to influence. So if we're talking about parenting, that's our whole job. Yeah. To influence, to provide the safe training ground, basically, for them to fall on their face, learn, come home and we're like, all right, what'd you learn?
Yeah.
Right? While helping them understand the world around them. But what was missing from parenting, in my opinion, is that we were trying to make all of our children a little mini version of us.
Yes.
And why wouldn't we? That's how it had been done.
Yeah.
Right? But now we are seeing more and more that each one of us, and look, this was news to me as a parent. When they came, I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to be your dad or me. You're a whole other, completely different thing.
Yes.
How dare you? You know? It's and so now true. That I have three of you and you all have different personalities and different needs, I'm parenting three different. No, no, no. I assign.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that what
one
really-
model.
Yeah. But that honestly, it makes sense. Right? Yeah. And especially the way that we were told parenting was. Yeah. Now, of course, this has been in parenting books, sort of, but really we only understand things once it gets into our culture or our community, because that's where we get belonging and safety.
Yep.
So now that we're like, ooh, all of these kids are unique little people.
Yeah.
To understand that as a parent, you don't have control, you have influence, and that you want to help this child develop into who they are with the wisdom that you have gained. Mm. Do they have the ears to hear it? Most of the time they do not.
Yeah.
Right? So control, influence. And so like with your daughter, understanding that she's going to say something and you're triggered. How do you know you're triggered? First lady, what happens to you? I'll just put you on the spot.
Well, I was going to say it's a lot of anger, a lot mm-hmm. of like, I know I'm reacting terribly in the moment. Yep. And it's almost like you can't
it's
help
out of
yourself.
Body, right?
Yeah.
You're just like watching it. Do you know what happens just before?
Mm.
She says the thing. Do you know what goes off in your body?
No.
So generally speaking, she triggered something, right?
Yeah.
There was... like heat would have risen if it's anger, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we know it. Mm-hmm. We know when that happens. Mm-hmm. And that's the emotional intelligence that I'm talking about. I'm trying to take clients, my one-on-one, I'm trying to take companies to notice when that is, because that, in that space, is your freedom and your control.
Mm.
To go, oh, she just said that. That started in my stomach. It's this hot feeling that goes up. And then you'll hear the thoughts like, and for me, it's like, why you little, you know,
yeah, exactly
that goes off. And the more you can realize that pattern, and it takes a while, usually you have to be like, oh, that happened 2 days ago. That's not great,
you know.
But that's okay. And then you go back and then you start to interrupt that, but you'll create space. And it's the most beautiful thing. And this is just bragging. I guess I'm just bragging at this point, right? Like my 14-year-old son said something real snotty to me.
Yeah.
And I felt it. I felt that. Mine's turn in my stomach. The heat rose. And I heard myself say to myself, and look, I get to practice this all the time, that like, oh, that pissed me off. I'm angry. And he's standing there like, why isn't she saying anything? Because I'm literally sorting within myself. And I realized in that moment that what he said was so triggering that I actually could no longer respond the way that is now my integrity, that is my value to respond. And I said, I'm going to need a minute. And he was like, are you mad? I said, yeah, I'm feeling a lot of anger.
Mm.
Is it because of what I said? Yes.
Mm.
But I said, I'm going to go take a second. I'm going to come back to this.
Yeah.
Wow. This does not happen all the time, but that's what we want.
Yeah.
Because it is okay to be angry. In fact, anger is one of my favorite things to talk about. Because anger has been, we've only seen it thrown at each other. And so it became evil, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Except for that it's not. It's your anger is holy. It's letting you know that you were disrespected. Mm. And it, because I've created a relationship with my anger flared. And I was like, all right, let's go talk about it.
Mm.
You know? Wow. And then when you sort, so then I left, I went to my room and I was like, he does not appreciate me. He doesn't see what's happening. He doesn't know how hard it is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, oh, yeah, he's actually not supposed to know how hard it is. Right.
I'm the adult.
Yeah.
I'm the adult. I always tell myself that.
I want them to have a childhood. Okay. Well, let me meet that in myself. Hey, what you're doing is really hard.
Mm.
It's not easy being a mother. And you didn't really know how. Right. Like people are like, having kids is hard. And we're like, yeah, we'll do better than you, though.
Yeah.
And then we have them. We're like, oh, that's what they're talking about.
Best mom in the world.
Until I had children. It's humbling. Yeah. Right. And so, but then I know I need that. Hey, is there something I need to change about what I'm doing? Mm. Right. Am I overextending myself? Because I do the same thing that all moms do. It's like, well, I can do it better and faster. So let me just do it. Yep. Right.
Yep.
And I'm meeting all those things within myself. And then it's just like, you know, it was rude what he said. And he already knows that I have created a safe place for him to express his feelings without being rude. That's my biggest thing. You get to be angry. You get to be whatever you are. You just don't get to be rude when you say it.
Mm, I like that.
Right? Because kids and everyone deserves to be heard.
Yeah.
Even if they are, quote unquote, wrong about what they're saying. Mm. The ability to get out in a safe place and go, I'm curious about why you feel that way. And instead of like, don't you know what I do for you? Do you not see the lights on? Yeah. Do you not know all the fun things we do? Yeah. Right? Because all that is shame.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right? And then with teens,
I'm so good at shame.
Oh. Well, listen, shame works. It just creates really sad humans.
Yes. It's the worst. It is.
But it does work in the moment.
Worst. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so then the whole point of this is like, you've got to meet it in yourself first. He triggered me. That's for me to handle.
Mm.
And then I knew it's dysregulation, right? So then I'm like, okay, I'm going to need a minute. And once I meet all those things, I can feel my heart rate start to slow.
Mm.
I start to come back to my executive brain or my logical brain. And I'm like, something must be going on with him.
Mm. Yeah.
What happened today? What is he feeling? What are the things he's not telling me? Even though I've made it as safe as I possibly could, doesn't mean that he has to feel safe all the time. Yeah. Okay. Here are the questions I want to ask, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go back into it. And it was like the day had been hard. He had been tired. He's not particularly happy about the chores that I get. Okay.
Yeah.
But it opened up a conversation as opposed to force and dominance.
Yeah.
And I've told my kids this since they were little. Our souls are the same age, but I'm your mom. I brought you here. So it's my job to keep you safe. I'm not always going to make the right call, but it's my job to make the call.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell you about it. Right. Mm-hmm. But that respect is something that human beings deserve. Period. It is a birthright. But if you don't know how to respect yourself, you are not going to give respect to other people. And so me using myself as an example, which feels like such a humble brag, you guys, oh my gosh,
I love it.
that is respecting myself. I deserved to take a moment and say like, how am I doing?
Mm, yeah.
So, and then it allows me the response, which is my freedom. That's what I want. Cause what I really want is what every other parent wants. To create that deep connection with their child so that we can get through to them.
Yeah.
So that hopefully they can have the ears to hear when we're like, please don't balance on that.
Yeah.
Or please don't fill in the blank of horrific things that children do. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's so powerful. And you know, it made me think of, you know, a conversation we had a couple of months ago around our Disagree Better initiative.
Yes.
And you were there when we had a big breakfast and we talked about this stuff. And I want to get into that because I think what a lot of people are feeling right now in the political, and this is a political year.
Yeah.
And I mean, not that they all aren't right now, but
it's a big one.
It's a big one. Yeah. And there's a lot going on and it can be really scary for a lot of people.
Very.
And you know, some people choose to just turn off. Some people choose to engage in a really negative way. Some people, I think that's the two the two options.
Then there's some people who are trying to do positive.
Yeah, but there you go. Okay,
kinda, mostly there's a lot of options.
There are a lot of options. Those are the two I'm seeing the most of.
Yes, they might cause.
But I do want to talk about that, the sort of the disagree better and how we can use this in political polarization when we come right back.
Perfect.
We're back here again with Maykel Reese, emotional and relational intelligence consultant and Utah influencer. And I'm influenced right now, and I'm feeling a lot of good skills that, you know, I can literally use today when I encounter my 17-year-old as I go home, and honestly, my adult children. One of the things that people don't prepare you for, and I talk about this often, they don't prepare you for adult children. That's a whole different ball game. And what I'm finding with my own children, and I think people are finding this with family members, they're finding this with neighbors, they're finding this with, you know, cousins and uncles and all the things, we are finding political polarization just infused in our entire society and our families everywhere you look. We see this with our teachers. Our teachers are, you know, they are on the sort of the front lines of political polarization right now. And it's tough. I mean, I have adult children and, you know, my 17-year-old. They disagree with us politically on lots of things.
Yeah.
And my husband and I disagree politically on some things. And so it's not unusual. And I think it used to be that it wasn't such a part of our identity. I mean, I'm thinking when I grew up, I'm like, I didn't know who was a Democrat and who was a Republican around me. Like, I didn't know what people's political views were around me. Not something that we really talked about or were infused in. But our kids, I mean, our kids know what's going on. They know that because partly, I think, screens and social media, it's right in front of them everywhere they go. Mm-hmm. But my concern has been for a long time, especially being in the political world, is that our children are watching really terrible behavior being modeled.
Yes.
Triggering behavior.
Yes.
Behavior because somebody's triggered.
Right.
So talk a little bit about, you know, this disagree better. How do we use these skills that we've been talking about that we use with our kids and our own parents and how we address these things? How do we use that with a neighbor or, you know, somebody in your congregation that just
disagrees with you
and also is so, I mean, you know, they start talking and you're like, ugh. Again, that heat rises in you and all of a sudden you're like,
you go into protect yourself mode.
Yes, yes.
Now, that's another thing, that it's an awareness situation. Most people don't know that there are three brain states.
Yes.
Executive, emotional, and survival. When we're triggered, we go into survival. That means our system is literally fighting for our life. Yeah. So if somebody disagrees with you, has different views than you, you are fighting or arguing to the death. And that your brain goes, it's me or them.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying. But it also starts to make sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some things that require this kind of intensity. Mm-hmm. Racism, right?
Yeah.
Anything that is genocide, right?
Yep.
That's black and white, guys. Yeah. Okay. Those things are meant to go, no. And I think that's one of the most misunderstood parts of this is any hot button issue. Mm-hmm. It's actually really hot button and hard for us to hold. It is meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
We are supposed to be emotionally moved by injustice, mm-hmm. by cruelty, by oppression. Okay. Most of us have no idea what to do about it. And then we go, we're scared. The system goes and we're like, nope, we protect ourselves. That's it. I'm not doing anything wrong. Yeah. My way is the right way.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's becoming aware of those things. And then how you use this in the political landscape is understanding that when you are triggered, we want to immediately blame and annihilate the other person. Let me tell you all the reasons why you are wrong. Mm-hmm. Right. And look, even if you're right, meaning, if I'm saying to you, hey, First Lady, we shouldn't be hurting anyone. And you were like, well, I think we should hurt some people. It's like, okay, right?
Yeah.
But if I'm triggered by that, I'm going to spend this, the rest of the time we have, trying to prove you wrong. I don't need to. It is, it just is. Does that make sense? Yeah. So when we're talking about any other political thing, once you are triggered and you can feel that hotness rise, or you feel the need to put someone in their place, that is actually the moment for you to take a breath, to breathe and say, have I recognized my own humanity? And what I mean by that is most of us are fighting for a spot in this world because we have never acknowledged our own pain. So when other people in pain, it's like, no, I have not received anything for that. I can't even go there because you're just trying to hold it together. That's why the notice, name, touch. I'm angry. I'm tired. I'm upset. I've been through things in my own life. When you haven't acknowledged that in yourself, you literally can't acknowledge it in other people.
Yeah.
Right? You've got to go to the human parts of yourself, humanize yourself, say, I am worthy of my time, attention, trust, love, all of it. Then you can go out and be a good person out in the world because you're no longer depleting it from you. Yeah. And so as you, this is about the rehumanization of disagreeing.
Yeah.
You and I'm certain, even though we have the same football views, right? we disagree on something. That does not take away your humanity, nor does it take away mine. What we have the opportunity, and it really is the opportunity to do, is I want to learn why you believe the way things that you do.
Yes.
I want to understand your lived experience that got you to where you are. And I want to listen and hear you. And that does not mean that I have to change my mind to agree with you.
Right.
Instead, if I can do that and hear you, understand you, ask questions, be curious about it, the chances that you're going to be curious about me are so high. The chances that you're going to see my humanity and that we can't hate each other go up exponentially. And so we're looking out into a world of complete reaction. I started out in this particular political arena in social justice. When I realized it is an emotional thing, I flipped so hard into teaching people about their emotions and relational intelligence because that actually solves the problem. Yeah. It's so hopeful to me. I can hardly contain it. Mm-hmm. If you can manage your own emotional life, you walk in this world as a good person.
Yeah.
You will treat everyone the way you would treat yourself.
Yeah.
This solves every environmental, social justice problem, all of it. But right now, it's an us versus them.
Yes. Well, and one of the saddest things, I think, is really the permission structure that we have, which is that there are some bad actors who, and most of them we refer to as conflict entrepreneurs, that are actually, I think when we understand that there are certain people and organizations and businesses who actually profit off your outrage,
yes,
profit off your absolutely contempt, profit off your fear. I think when you understand that, you realize like, I'm actually, they figured out how to manipulate my emotions.
Yep.
And manipulate me into believing that you are my enemy.
Yep.
That because you disagree with me, you must be evil and horrible. And to me, that makes me sad. And I think you're exactly right. The curiosity and the getting proximate to somebody else, really is that moment. And I love what you said, you know, the curiosity, tell me more, the listening, being able to just talk to somebody. I'm telling you, I've never had my mind changed by somebody screaming at me. And I've had that happen in political situations where people have screamed in my face. And I'm not even the candidate. Just FYI, PS, for anyone that wants to scream
really
at me.
People like to scream when it comes to politics. Yeah.
But I have changed my mind a lot when I have listened to somebody's story.
Yep.
And I think that's the power in what you're saying, is that human connection.
Absolutely. And the ability to go, like, let's just take racism for an example. As when I started teaching in 2020, the confusing amount of emotions that were in people who are in white bodies, okay?
Yes.
it's this like, I would never have chosen this. I didn't know. So there's confusion, doubt, grief, embarrassment, yeah. and then defensiveness mm-hmm. and kind of bewilderment too. And look, all of those things are fair, but to try to hold all that at once and not even understand why, that's a lot. So to be able to process that and go, actually, I didn't choose this. Yeah. This isn't necessarily my fault. I did not ask for this, but it is here. Mm-hmm. And I know my humanity. I'm taking care of myself. I'm acknowledging how hard this is for me to hold. So maybe I'm curious. Maybe this did happen. Mm-hmm. This thing that these people who are in black and brown bodies are saying, this must have happened mm-hmm. or could have, right? You're opening it up. And I don't mean to diminish anything that has happened to black and brown people, but I'm saying that that is, you've got to understand the psychology behind it. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to do that and go, oh my goodness, I am suffering, they're suffering, and yet it's actually my turn to listen mm-hmm. while I am also going through something.
Yeah.
So how do I take care of myself while learning how to listen? Because even after 2020, it flipped to like, well, I can't say anything and I can't speak if yeah. you were in a white body.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, we need to create spaces where white people can hold the space for white people while black and brown bodies heal. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? Mm-hmm. Instead of like, oh, we were always wrong and we need to like, we don't get rights anymore or we don't get to be human. It's not that. Yeah. It's the holding the space for the both. And so to kind of bring it home to my lived experience, I had that experience within my own body. Mm. The white, half of me is white, half of me is brown. Those things had to sit at the same time and start to communicate mm. so that I could understand that these two things that shouldn't be able to sit together absolutely do. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that here's the most incredible part to me. There's actually room for all of us.
Yeah.
We have created this scarcity and it isn't manipulation. It is to get your votes. It is to get your money. Yeah. They have control of your emotions.
Yeah.
They've got control of you. Yeah. And so to bring this home, this is something that's not only within your power, it is absolutely doable. And you remember that you are the source of your own power. Yeah. You're choosing what you give your energy to. You get your freedom back in your responses.
Mm. Yeah, I love that.
And all of that, it is a done deal. You will then walk as a good person. You don't have to do more work. It's very practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love it. I love everything you're saying. And I just think for me, it's always, you know, listen first.
Yes.
I haven't had your experience.
Yeah.
So having you tell me your experience today makes me much more, it just makes me a better person. It makes me more aware of different people and how they operate in the world and where they come from, you know, emotionally, mm-hmm. physically. It's absolutely beautiful. And I think the more we have these conversations and really understand each other as humans, it's powerful. So thank you for your work. Thank you for what you're doing. You're making the world a better place. And we so appreciate that.
Thanks for having me. I love what I do.
Thank you. You can find more about Maykel Reese. Follow her at Maykel Reese. Thanks for being a friend.